Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. It's 9 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. Today we're joined by WAMC's Alan Shartok.
Hello.
Good morning. We are also joined by University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
Good morning. And political consultant Libby Post.
Hi.
Hi. Nice to have you all here. Everybody have a good weekend?
No.
My family was in town.
They made it through the snow.
They loved it, including a friend from Miami. Oh, my God, she was disgusting.
Really?
Yeah, she's reveling in it. We're saying, shut up.
Shut up. And I fell on the ice.
You did?
Oh.
Yeah, Roselle took me to, we went to the theater to a movie. And on the way down, she had to go get something else. And she said, I'll take you to the movie theater. I don't want you walking on the ice. And I said, oh, no. I took two steps and I fell on my.
Ooh.
Yes, yes, yes.
Not good with back problems.
No, and now I'm about to take two Motrin.
Oh, boy. Well, that's fine. They won't make you woozy. You'll still be sharp.
Woozy or bluesy.
That's right. How about you, Libby? You enjoy the snow?
No, but it's there.
It's true.
And more coming.
Yeah.
Is there more coming?
Supposedly.
I did
it
not
is what
hear.
It is.
I know it'll be cold the next couple of days. All right, enough with the pleasantries. On with the show today.
Jump right in.
And we begin with some philosophical things. And this was from, Friday's New York Times. And I thought this was a fascinating piece, I guess, from their ethicist, Chuck Klosterman. I guess that's his technical term, the ethicist. Here was a question.
Technical term? His name, you mean?
Klosterman.
Ah.
I believe his email is ethicist at New York Times.
That's right. Yes. It used to be Randy right. Cohen, right?
Yes, it used to be Randy Cohen.
Okay, right. Here's the question that he answered. And the title of this is The First Amendment Right to Non-Political Homework. And as you, a couple of you are professors, this would be a good one to ask of you. The question that Chuck answered was, for my daughter's high school biology class, the students are required to take a public action addressing climate change. They have a wide range of options of what they can do. Write a letter to a public official, design a website, develop a public service announcement, or organize a flash mob. Wonderful. They're required to submit proof that they presented their work publicly. That is, that they mailed the letter, launched the website, etc. Is it ethical for the school to require students to speak publicly on a specific issue, or even to give extra credit for doing so? Does the student's right to free speech also give them the right not to speak publicly on this topic? And so that was the question the ethicist answered. And let's throw it to you, Rosemary, first.
I frequently teach ethics, so I love this story. It was really interesting. I'd give an automatic A to the first student who said, I'm not putting this out. Here's the work, but I'm not putting it out. I have a right to. I think it's refreshing that we have high school teachers who are giving assignments like this. On the other hand, more often than not, schools do not enforce First Amendment rights. I had a fourth grader once who didn't like his gym teacher, so he organized a petition drive and got hold bunch of kids to sign it saying, you know, this isn't a good teacher, we need another one, and presented it to the teacher and was reprimanded for it. I would have written about it, except of course it was my own kid saw it, but I could not. But that to me is fairly typical of what happens in our schools. We do not allow rights. So I like the assignment, but absolutely no, they should not be, science teachers should not be forcing students to take a public stand they don't necessarily believe.
I think I'm guilty.
Guilty of what?
Well, what we're talking about.
Really, you've done this?
Well, I didn't do it. I'll tell you the story. Many, many years ago when I was 23, no, that was another song. I'm my own grandpa. I thought it was a good thing to tell my class because, you know, it's almost impossible.
What was the class?
It was a political science 101 class. And I told them that anybody, because I knew it was almost sadistic, because I knew getting a letter on any subject into the New York Times is almost impossible, unless you, of course, are a United States senator or, you know, or
the president of Russia.
You're the president of Russia. Or you're a bit of a fool, because they like to publish every once in a while foolish letters that show what the bad side is thinking. And so I said to the class, anybody who gets two letters into the New York Times can have an A in the class.
This sounds familiar.
Former student
speaking,
eh?
Two letters into the New York can get an A, figuring nobody would get an A. You know, just futility.
But it didn't matter, the subject matter, right? In other words,
no,
you had an experiment.
No, I didn't care. I didn't care
See,
what
I think
they
that's
wrote
different.
On. So this guy in my class, let's just call him Joe, I'll never forget him, big, tall guy, a returning non-trad student, wrote a letter to the Times. This is how long ago it was, saying the Ayatollah Khomeini was exactly right. The way to handle criminals, instead of putting them in prison and paying for it, was to chop off the hand. Okay, a thief was to chop off the hand. The New York Times proceeded to publish the article. And I was sitting at my desk, and this this lady called up and said, I'm the Times lady, letter lady, can you find this guy? We're going to publish his letter. And sure enough, they published the letter.
Did you give him an A?
Well, he deserved an A. That's right, except that he was an A student.
So it
was really, and I think he was the only one in all those years who took the bait.
I have long said that if anybody actually memorized the First Amendment, which is 45 words, I would give them an automatic A. And I give clues all during the year, like, this is something everyone should know. You should learn it by heart. No one's ever done it. So students who pay attention like that, and if a student here said, no, I don't have to publish this. I have the right not to, knows the First Amendment and should deserve it. However, you know, I'm looking at the assignment, and they were not required to take any certain public stand.
Oh, no, it's
like
you right.
take a public public action. That's so you could say climate change is a hoax and it's being rammed down our throat.
Oh, yeah.
You're not required to take one particular
point still,
of view.
But still, on a divisive issue, should you have to make public statements
No. And I think I've already answered that.
Yes.
But I think the assignment was, I don't think they were trying to trample on student rights.
No,
what do you think,
but I think it may well be that the teacher had a feeling about climate change.
Right.
And was saying, go do something about climate change. But let's say...
Well, if it was a science teacher, the teacher should have had a certain stand on it.
I think that's perfectly all right.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't have to be, as you said before, doesn't have to be sent out. I mean, let's say, let me give you a situation. They have a parent at home who is, they may be a liberal Democrat and the parent at home, maybe a conservative Republican or vice versa. You know, why tempt the fates? You see what I mean? I mean, just the fact that you have to be out there taking one of these positions may be somewhat potentially harmful.
Well, I get where it's First Amendment, but there's also this thing about civically minded and speaking out and being comfortable speaking out about things and about issues. And, usually you get this from your social studies teacher, not necessarily from your bio teacher, but...
I see a point.
There's so many people who have no clue how to do any of this, how to speak out about anything, how to make an argument, how to,
ask college students what petition for redress of a grievance means.
Well,
they don't
know.
Right,
well, I had this little Facebook conversation over the weekend, It's like I was astounded that when I was doing Comm 101 TAing, they couldn't write a simple sentence. So I don't have a problem with the teachers giving these kinds of assignments and wanting people to get involved in their civic life. Should they be penalized if they are shy and don't want to send a letter? No.
Or philosophically opposed to that.
But there was no opposition here. You mean philosophically opposed to speaking out in public?
And having to do that for a grade. In other words, Klosterman sums it up really well. You can make the kid write the letter, but you can't force the kid to mail it.
Send it out.
And if a student writes a well-argued letter and they want to mail it, then the teacher can say, great, good for you. That is, that's what I was looking for. I was hoping for that. All right, so we're all in agreement, more or less. No controversy.
Can I add?
Yeah,
but then we can't get into the next one, which is really good. Let's go to the next one where we can fight.
Well, let Alan add, and then we'll take a break and then get bad to the other fight.
It isn't much, but years ago, my wonderful wife, Roselle, the lovely Roselle, and her colleague, Jack Spencer, put into place the first Holocaust unit in the United States that every high school student in that Monument Mountain had to take. Of course, there were people who thought it was anti-German. And therefore, I'm not kidding you.
But most Germans are really nice people.
Of course, but there was somebody who said that, and they had a big meeting and all that stuff. And the kids stood up, and defended the unit. Said they had learned more than they had ever learned before in their lives.
And I just want to make one more statement. Mm-hmm. This gets kids ready for college. Okay? Because when you're in college, when I was in your graduate student.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we took a class called lobbying. Yeah. And we had to get engaged in the process. Mm-hmm. And we had to write about it.
And you today are one of the top lobbyists in the New York State
Legislature.
Sure. Well, there you go.
You're pretty good.
That's why she drives a Jaguar.
Yes, yes. That's why
great work.
All right, Mr. Hopper, let's take a break. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York. Purchasing estate jewelry, coins, silver, fine arts, and collections. Sponsor of Antiques Roadshow, marklawson.com. Ward's Nursery, Great Barrington. Holiday country decor, lights, ornaments, and candles. Plus mini zoo, Santa's workshop, and a greenhouse of flowers. Ward'sNursery.com. And Washington County Tourism and the towns and villages therein, featuring museums, art venues, farmers markets, specialty shops for holidays and gift certificates, WashingtonNYCounty.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning, 20 minutes after 9, almost 21 minutes after 9 o'clock. Alan Shartok is here, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. If you want to send us your emails, feel free. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org.
You have done a terrific job last week, don't you think?
Yes.
Ray, in moderating this?
Right.
Hard to live up to the Joe standard, but you've done remarkably well.
I appreciate that very much. And
when's Joe coming back?
Tomorrow.
Okay, fine.
And lucky you. And lucky me,
no.
As a matter of fact. All right, so this is the next one, and this was from Saturday's New York Times. And why did I take my glasses off? Let's put them back on. I'll read you the first paragraph. Utah law prohibiting polygamy is weakened. A federal judge has struck down parts of Utah's anti-polygamy law as unconstitutional in a case brought by a polygamous star of a reality television series. Months after the Supreme Court bolstered rights of same-sex couples, the Utah case could open a new frontier in the nation's recognition of once prohibited relationships. Judge Clark Wadoops of United States, that's what it says, United States District Court.
Yeah.
Wadoops, United States District Court in Utah ruled late on Friday that part of the state's law prohibiting cohabitation, the language used in the law to restrict polygamous relationships, violates the First Amendment guarantee of free exercise of religion as well as constitutional due process. He left standing the state's ability to prohibit multiple marriages in the literal sense of having two or more valid marriage licenses.
Mm.
Discuss, panel.
Libby has to go first. It's all her fault.
Oh, hey.
I mean, this is the kind of story that none of us want. I mean, not that we don't want to read, but it's like, you see, I told you so.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's going to happen. First, you gays get to get married. Then you're going to marry your children, your dogs, which wouldn't be a bad idea. Your dogs, you know, and you're all going to want to have polyamorous, polygamous relationships. And, you know, it's insane. I mean, it's just, first of all, it's insane. I mean, Scalia says this, you know, as a reason for denying lesbians and gays the right to marry. We don't want to marry multiple people, and I might sound like an old fart here, but, you know, we don't want to, we just want to marry our partners, you know.
But there's no danger of you falling into the same trap that so many have fallen into with regard to same-sex marriage.
Which is what?
Which is that it's wrong. And now you're saying that
polygamy
is wrong.
Though.
Are you? In other words, where's the distinction?
Look, one person, one life, one marriage.
And that's the gospel according to Libby?
Well, one person at a time.
Okay. All right.
You know, I mean, I tried non-monogamy when I was young and stupid. And it doesn't really work that well. It's a little difficult to maneuver.
I agree.
My attitude is, you know, we want to get married to the people we love, the one person we love. I'm sorry I sound a little old.
Well, what if you love two people?
Well, but...
Darling, you can't love two and still stay true?
You can't. I mean, this guy certainly can. But, you know, I want to see the one wife and the multiple husbands. That's what I want
that
to see.
That actually exists in some parts
of
the
Rosemary.
World.
Yeah.
My personal position is that one spouse is too many. So this whole debate, like, really is academic for me. And academically, it does make sense. And I do think, as extreme and weird as he is, Scalia's got the right idea. If we're going to stay out of people's lives, let them live, adults have consenting relationships that we keep private, then yes, polygamy for those who want it makes sense. It doesn't change the life of the rest of us.
What about all those people who
But
what about all those people who have, you know, more than one? I mean, they married and then they have somebody else on the side, men and women, by the way. This is tough stuff.
Libby Scalia's point was that if we say yes to this, it's going to lead to all sorts of horrors, of which he included polygamy. But intellectually, I think that is right, that once you say yes, same-sex marriage is okay, what is the argument to say, which I know you're trying to make, so I'm just saying, be more clear, why is same-sex marriage okay, but multiple marriage, plural marriage, as they call it, is not? It's consulting adults in the privacy of their own home. What's the argument against it?
Libby, the floor is yours.
It's disgusting, I think, but, still.
Wait a second. What's disgusting?
Oh, I would never do this. I could. Oh, my God. I mean, I get women wanting to live together, but, like, go join a convent or a commune, have sisters. But a man, what's he needed
for? See, it's not that necessarily it's wrong or right. For me, it's the politics of the situation.
Okay.
Of what it, once again, we're going to be made out, my community is going to be made out to be the devil here. And that we are the ones who are causing moral downfall.
Okay, we got
society.
That. We got that part.
And
now,
that's my
got that part, Libby. But now tell us what you think about polygamy. In other words, it's not all about, gay stuff. It's what, you see these women on television.
You make a commitment to one person for...
Well, you say so, but they don't say so. They get on television and they say, we love our community this way. And we honor our guy.
And
she's stuttering.
It's just that, they are so constrained with what it means to be a woman in that society, in the Mormon society, that it's all about serving the man, and the man needs more than one woman to be served. Right. It's insane.
Okay,
it's just
on what do you base your assertion, which, by the way, I agree with, that it's, marriage is for two. But what do you base that on?
It gets too complicated.
It's a pragmatic...
It's legal. Look at the legal constructs that we will now have to deal with. I mean, when lesbians and gays would have kids, right, before same-sex marriage, okay, if the non-biological parent went into the school to get the kid because something happened, the school wouldn't let the non-biological parent take the kid because there was no legal standing.
Okay, so
where is their legal standing in all of this? Are we going to change, this means we're going to have to change all the laws throughout the land around legal standing in terms of our family.
Just as we did for gay marriage.
You do sound an awful lot like those who were against gay marriage for years.
I don't think so.
Libby, I think you have an untenable position.
We got ours pull up the gangplank.
Yeah, well, maybe.
You can't argue this, Libby. You're going to lose this.
Okay, fine.
It's uncomfortable because people are even more opposed maybe to polygamy than to gay marriage.
Oh,
but
I don't know.
Intellectually, it's the same.
What about
Utah? Utah wouldn't be in the union unless they agreed to do that.
And they're saying that if this continues, they're going to fight it.
The thing is, we're not fighting. The lesbian gay community with same-sex marriage did not fight for polygamy. We fought for the ability for us to marry our partners and live our lives like everybody else.
We all get it and we all applaud that. At least we do.
And you're right. And I don't know. I mean, I have friends. I have friends that are in polyamorous relationships. And
I love that.
So is this a constitutional issue that will move forward, or is this just a...
I think it was inevitable that it was going to come up, and yes, it is going to move forward. That's what I would say.
And where is it in 10 years, Rosemary?
Oh, in 10 years?
Yeah.
Well, I think this could go to the Supreme Court.
And what do you think they'll do?
Oh, the Supreme Court? Wow.
Right.
They'll look for some way to knock it
down. This Supreme Court will be a little long in the tooth in 10 years.
I mean, let's look at this. The issue of polygamy has been in our country for more than 100 years. This started with the Mormon religion.
Yeah.
And it's...
I would suggest it's been in the society
for much longer than that.
Since the first guy came out of the muck.
Yeah.
You go back to the Old Testament, there was polygamy.
Yeah. Not my lifestyle of choice, but,
Well, that was fun.
Who are we to judge?
All right, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break here.
Do we write?
Oh, that's a great point. Thank you for bringing that up. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Get your letters in now. Alan will read them after the news. If they're, you know, you can read them on the radio. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And you are listening to the aforementioned Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 9:37 is the time. Alan Shartok is here, and Rosemary Armeo and Libby Post. It's our panel for the morning. You can always email us at roundtable@wamc.org. And Alan, we got a few.
We did. Robert called and said, wrote and said, Libby's right. The legal complications of polygamy are of a different order than gay marriage. One of the driving issues behind the early move toward the right to gay marriage had to do with the right of gays to make end-of-life decisions about their partners that were possible at odds with their partners' families. The complications of who has the right to make these decisions when they are multiple spouses becomes untenable. Bob of Red Hook. All right.
Okay.
Next.
Next.
Unless you guys want to say something. Ron writes, as a gay male, the LGBT community and friends did not fight to allow polygamy. Here's one problem in allowing polygamy. What about the bigamist? By that I mean the male, parenthesis usually, was multiple wives and or families, but the other spouses are not aware of each other. By legalizing polygamy, wouldn't such bigamy also be legal?
No.
I think most people should
no.
would. I don't think most people would condone such a situation. Ron of Cohoes.
Okay.
All right.
Our
wonderful commentator, Stephen Gottlieb.
All right.
Hello,
Stephen.
Okay. Rosemary is wrong. The issues are not intellectually the same. She is not considering the harm side of the equation on polygamy.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you. And once again, the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. And thanks to Steve Gottlieb for checking in here. And Libby, do you have any rejoinder?
No, not a rejoinder. But I just want to say that, you know, this is a very small sect within the Mormon Church. And this,
it's a breakaway. It's a fundamentalist
they're
breakaway.
They're not speaking for the Mormons. And I get that. And I appreciate that. But the other part of the flip of that is we just need to remember how much money the Mormons put into the anti-marriage equality movement, especially around Prop 9 in California. So they really do want to keep it one man, one woman, you know, and they don't want that. I don't think they're happy with this at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
That's all I wanted to say.
All right. So it's the Roundtable on WAMC, and now we'll move on. We have dispensed with that. And, Alan, by the way, before we get on to the next topic that I had prepared for the show, you brought this one late in the game, and people are upset. Time Warner Cable, this is from the Berkshire Eagle, our buddy Clarence Fanto.
Yeah.
Time Warner Cable is taking heat from local representatives in Washington over its decision to drop New England Cable News from its Berkshire lineup. And Senators Ed Markey and Elizabeth Warren and Congressman Richie Neal have fired off a letter to the company's CEO, Glenn A. Britt, and they ask him to reconsider the unexplained decision.
And basically the Time Warner people are saying no. Now here's an interesting point. If you ask some kids who go to school in Western Massachusetts who the governor is, they'll tell you it's Cuomo. Because the only news that they get, really, is the Albany news. And Albany is defined as the primary market, so that, if I understand it correctly, you can't even have, you know, if you have another station that's doing the same sort of thing, they get kicked off. They're not allowed to be on because Albany has primacy, which is ridiculous. Now, look, you know, we sit here in Albany, but we cover the Berkshires. You know, we have two people in Western Massachusetts. We think it's incredibly valuable. And I think the people who are ticked off about this, see what I said there, Libby?
Ticked off about this. Thank you.
Was Libby swearing earlier? I didn't hear it.
No. She didn't.
It's usually Rosemary does it.
Yeah, that's right.
So
I've got a tick.
Yeah, ticked off. Yeah. I think they're right. I think they should protest. I think it's great that the congressional delegation and the legislative delegation are checking in on this. You know, Massachusetts has a right to have Massachusetts news as well as, from us and anybody else.
But having cable is not a right. I mean, this is a business, right?
Having cable at this point is a right because you can't get broadcast anymore. Everything's digital.
If I plug an antenna into a TV digital TV, I get 20 channels.
Okay.
No.
I've read this carefully to see if the controversy, if the protest was over adding Al Jazeera, which took unprecedented and really not incorrect criticism from our government when the Iraq War broke out.
Right.
And Al Jazeera covered it in ways our own media did not. And so Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, and the President denounced it as as biased and unfair and possibly anti-American. It is none of those things. Al Jazeera is a highly professional organization.
Well,
there's a big operation based in New York, and having it on our TV and our outlets is
okay,
a great
so
idea.
What does this have to do with Massachusetts?
Well, in other words,
I'm just saying that
Al Jazeera is being added,
and
NECN
is being dropped.
However, here's what Time Warner said in a letter to the Bangor Daily News. Said, we're always evaluating the value of the programming of on our lineup. We're occasionally add or drop channels. We do not believe NECN, New England Cable News, represents a good value for all of our New England customers. Value includes several factors, including cost, viewership, and unique content. It's a business decision.
It's a business decision.
It is a business decision.
Well, let me tell you something right now. This is still a democracy. People still pay money to the cable system.
Then they don't have to do that.
And they have a right to protest. It's not that they don't have to do it. They have a right to check in and say, we want this. And if you think that Time Warner or any other cable system has not changed their mind when pressured, you're wrong.
But is it
so
right?
So you students out there looking for a final project?
That's right.
Here you
this
go.
Is it.
Right
but, I mean, is it correct and proper for elected officials, high-up elected officials, to twist an arm on something like this?
They're representing
a programming
their constituents.
Decision.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
They're representing their constituents. This is democracy. That's the way it's supposed to work. You know, they're supposed to represent their constituents. And, you know, the thing is this. There are so many cable channels. It's not a killer. They could add and keep NECN. I mean, they call it. And I wonder, do they have YNN where you live?
Of course they do. That's their thing.
Okay. And this is an
NBC.
And
it's all over the place.
And this is an NBC station. So I'm sure there's some competition going on, too.
You think so?
Yes. I'm sure that there's some of that going on. But if people want NECN and they go to their legislators because they're the ones who can actually get to the higher-ups, that's what they should be doing.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. And, of course, if you want New England news, I would suggest you tune to this radio station.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll be all set
with
or without your cable. And, of course, this comes over the airwaves.
Was it a business decision to include this item in our newscast today?
Well, you'll have to ask Alan.
He brought a sneaky commercial in.
Yes, that's right. 90.3 on your dial.
Well, actually, there are those people, let's be fair about this, who say, you know, it's the Albany station. I want to make it clear it is not the Albany station. We happen to have our main office here, but we have two people. It costs a fortune covering New England news in a better way than anybody else, period.
Okay.
Especially now that you can't get New England channels.
That's right.
Well, that's the point. That's why I wanted to check in. I wanted to say, you know, we support them.
Message delivered. This is from the New York Times. The sheriffs refuse to enforce laws on gun control. We've seen this here in New York. It is now growing across the country in Colorado and elsewhere. When Sheriff John Cook of Weld County, Colorado, explains in speeches why he is not enforcing the state's new gun laws, he holds up two 30-round magazines. One, he says, he had before July 1st when the law banning the possession, sale, or transfer of the large-capacity magazines went into effect. The other he maybe obtained afterward. He shuffles the magazines, which look identical, and then challenges the audiences to tell the difference. How is a deputy or an officer supposed to know which is which? So in Colorado, they have a new package of gun laws enacted since the shootings in Aurora, Colorado, and in Newtown, Connecticut. These gun laws, as the ones in New York, have been hailed by gun control advocates as the way to go. There are sheriffs who are saying, listen, we can't and we won't enforce these laws.
When the sheriff takes his oath of office,
mm-hmm.
puts his hand on the Bible or the Constitution and says, I will uphold the laws of this country and of this state, are you telling me, anybody, I'm not specifically asking you, Ray, but are you telling me that they're allowed to make up their mind which laws they're going to enforce or not?
This is a really frightening development and really bad. And it's important for sheriffs and all law enforcement to let us know when laws are no good, when they have problems enforcing
sure.
them. They can lobby for changes.
They have freedom
they
of speech.
They can point out the problems. That's yes, they have freedom of speech. It's also important to get the law changed, not to just drop
if that's
the
what
law.
They think.
I mean, what if we went out and said, okay, well, we know a whole lot more about the community than you do, and you don't need a stoplight out there on Central Avenue. I'm not going to obey it anymore. anymore.
Right.
That then you, this it's a it's, road to anarchy.
But that they'll this enforce is, with a passion.
Well, this just opens up for I will interpret the laws as I see fit, and you know, oh, that's not really rape.
Right.
You know. He's not really beating you.
Well,
he's your husband.
So one other point
and,
here.
And the other point is, I mean, we saw what happened here, and I have to bring this back to marriage. We saw what happened here when town clerks refused to marry people.
Right.
They were relieved of their duties.
All right. Well, let go ahead.
I just want to make a point. There is a political aspect to all of this. Let's remember that what these sheriffs are doing, they saw people being recalled in Colorado, right?
Right. Yes. Right. The strong law.
Senators and the
recalled.
Majority leader being
the
recalled,
system,
and they say, "I don't want to be recalled. I like my job as sheriff, so I'm not going to obey the law." That's a little
bit
rough.
Okay.
Now, well, down south, we had a lot of that going on.
We've had a lot of that all the way up to the president. Now, the president has chosen not to enforce, you know, marijuana laws. The DOMA, he said, we're not going to enforce this, and we are not going to, we think it's a bad law, which ultimately was struck down. But he said at the time, we're not going to enforce this law. So,
but nobody could get, no one's going to get killed by somebody getting married.
It doesn't make a difference.
I think
Ray is right. You have a law and you enforce it.
Okay,
that's
well, why is Ray right?
And wait, and let's bring it back now to health care, too, where a law is passed and the president decides, you know, we're going to delay this part. I think Republicans are right. There's no right for that.
But why is Ray right here? I don't get
it. Why is Ray the center of this? That's a better question.
Well, no, I mean, I don't get it. Why, at what point, as we all tell our children, do two wrongs make a right? Let's assume you're right, that the president shouldn't have done the health care law, which I think he was entitled to do under the law. But let's assume, he was wrong to do it. That doesn't get to this issue.
It does indeed.
Wait, yes,
it's
it does.
Enforcement
They're both
of
wrong.
Laws.
Oh, stop both of it. Okay. Start obeying the
if
law.
If you're going to enforce laws at a sheriff level, then can't you assume that the president, who also has to uphold the Constitution of the United States, is going to enforce the laws?
But we are not talking about that right now. Are talking about a sheriff. As Libby just said, people's lives are at stake right here. That we are talking about a sheriff saying, this is a right in my
jurisdiction.
I am not going to do it. Now, you guys always do it because it's a standard argument against people by people who don't like a law. They say, well, somebody else did something or somebody else
did
it.
So you're saying
also.
It was okay for the president to do it, but it's not okay for the sheriff?
That. He's saying he doesn't like the comparison. And Ray is simply pointing out that there's seep in here.
Two wrongs do not make a right.
And there's no one said that at all.
Yes, you just did.
You are totally making that up. You are completely making that up and distorting the argument.
I'll let Libby decide. Am I making that
wrong,
up? Yeah.
It's wrong with the gun laws, and it's wrong with not enforcing marijuana. A law is a law and must be enforced by those who are put into office to enforce them.
Okay.
It doesn't matter whether law is about life or death or about drugs.
There is another wrinkle, and this is at the very end of this New York
Just
Times
what we
piece.
Need. Another wrinkle
Sheriff
in this
Cook,
argument.
For his part, said that what he was entitled to use discretion in enforcement, especially when he believed the laws were wrong or unenforceable. He says, quote, in my oath it says, I will uphold the U.S. Constitution and the Constitution of the State of Colorado, he said. It doesn't say I have to uphold every law passed
excuse
by the
me,
legislature.
Excuse me. Let's remember that the Constitution of the State of Colorado will include a provision about the legislature passing the laws. So let's not try that one.
By the way,
you're right about that.
Stephen Gottlieb emailed earlier, and I know he's going to want to weigh in on us bringing up the president selectively enforcing laws such as DOMA and the marijuana, because we've had this argument before, and he said his argument essentially to me was, this is done all the time.
Well, I think we have to be careful when we weigh in.
Well, I think it does happen all the time. It's actually impossible given the resources for sheriffs to equally enforce all laws. What's different here, though, is it's a political stand they're taking. They're proudly
in order to get reelected, Rosemary.
Yes,
that's what it's
proudly
about.
Proudly boasting that they're not going to do it.
They saw those recalls happen, and
absolutely.
They said, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want some, right-winger running against me as a sheriff candidate. That's what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone more right-wing than I am.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Libby.
This is a fun show. Let's take a break, Hopper. We'll be back.
Well,
very contentious.
Support comes from Home Plate Deli and Caterers Kingston, specializing in delivery and setup throughout the Hudson Valley, catering breakfast, lunch, dinner, and business and personal events. HomePlateDeli.com. Casual Set, Stuyvesant Plaza, featuring modern women's fashion, selections, and personal service. Serving the Capital Region for over 40 years, 518-482-7136. And the Beechwood Group of Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC. Serving not-for-profits and individual investors, Mary McDonald, Financial Advisor, and Joseph Steiniger, CFP, Financial Advisor, TheBeechwoodGroup.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's our Monday panel. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's 9:53. Alan Shartok is here. Alan and I will be in a room working on our differences right after the show. Libby Post is here. Rosemary Armeo. We got a letter saying, you know, you and Alan, you got to work out your differences, not on the air. Frankly, we have great
That's
love.
That's what it's all about.
We have great love really and folks, they really love each other.
Yeah, exactly. We have great love and respect. It's about, listen, if we all agreed on this show, And for the sake of argument, every one of us has taken a contentious point they don't necessarily agree with at times
Absolutely.
On this show. It's part of the conversation.
Didn't we get a letter once that said, we all know how you feel about everything, every one of you. Just like get new people in
yeah.
there. Shut up.
And you know what? We're here to make a conversation, not go, oh, I agree with Rosemary. Yeah. Oh, Alan's right on this.
Yeah.
That would not be very exciting. Yeah. I mean, who knows if this is very exciting.
I should probably tell a story that you won't like, Ray.
No, fine.
But
save it
undoing all the good you just
Save it for the room.
I love Ray, of course, and I love his brains and how smart he is. And
right.
The rest of it. And I have always pushed him to be out front with his views because I think it adds so much to what we do here. He sometimes says, well, it's not really proper. I go on the air. I don't want to do that kind of stuff.
I just argue with Rosemary in the breaks.
Right. No, but you argue. Now, more and more, you're showing yourself, and I love that. That doesn't mean Walter Cronkite, the greatest broadcaster of our history, couldn't say, you know, about the war in Vietnam, this thing is lost.
I think we should get out of Vietnam. Now that we're on the topic, I think we should be out of there.
I bet you do.
Yeah. All right, fine. All right, let's move on. This is... the platitudes must cease. We have 4 minutes left. The Saudi prince criticizes Obama administration, citing indecision in Mideast. An influential Saudi prince blasted the Obama administration on Sunday for what he called indecision and loss of credibility with allies in the Middle East, saying that American efforts to secure a peace deal between Israelis and the Palestinians would founder without a clear commitment from President Obama. That from the New York Times. Rosemary, we have brief time. Go.
Does anybody feel some trouble here that Saudi Arabia is blasting us for not taking care of the Middle East and rather than stepping up itself? This is a rich country with a lot of power in the Middle East. Why are we getting blamed for it?
I'll never forget the time they cut off the princess's head or the guy who was going out with her because he was a commoner. I said, sorry, what? You must die. That's true. Boom, off came the head.
I think that was the movie, The King and I.
It was not. And really I'll tell you could look it up, as Casey Stengel said.
Okay, but what does that have to do with...
I'm not sure, but I'll
let
you guys
find
this out.
Political unrest and problems in the...
You're going to listen to those people cut people's heads off?
Well, I'm not, but we're talking about other Middle Easterners, other Arabs.
That's what you're talking
to
about.
Them.
With what's going on in Syria now and the refugee problem.
Right.
It was on 60 Minutes last night, I think.
It's horrible.
It was 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
It's absolutely horrible. And, you know, why don't some of the Arab countries step up and take care of the people? And make sure that those folks, those kids,
the truth is that the Palestinians have never been supported by other Arabs.
No, they haven't. That's right.
Since the 40s.
That's right. They didn't want, I mean, there was the opportunity for a two-state solution in 1948, and people said no.
Right.
And then when the Palestinians went to Jordan or they went to the other countries, they didn't want them. You know, and now for the Saudis to say what they're saying, I think it's a little disingenuous.
Well,
none of this should be construed as a support of Obama's steadfastness or lack thereof in the Middle East. But for Saudi Arabia to be casting the criticism is more than I can stand.
I'll tell you what, you know, you have a letter?
10 letters.
All right. Well,
on
all right.
This or
on everything.
All right. We'll shelve this discussion. Alan, you can read 2 minutes of letters and then you have to go.
Okay. Here we go. Here we go. Very quickly. John writes, sheriffs are elected officials and are accountable to the voters. Sheriffs have limited resources and must prioritize the laws they enforce. That is okay. Just because a sheriff does not enforce a law does not mean a prosecutor will not. And by the way, prosecutors also choose which laws they enforce or prosecute. So there are checks and balances. System is working just as it should be. And then Kirsten said, dear Joan panel, Joe is not here.
Hi,
I was
Joe.
Listening to the roundtable this morning on where we're appalled, as always, and was appalled, hurt, and offended by Libby's comment about Mormon women during the discussion of polygamy. Oops. First of all, it is incorrect to lump Mormons together with polygamists. She said that. You weren't listening, but she did say that. Yeah. She went on to say that. The mainstream Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints does not have not supported plural marriage.
We know that.
Libby said that.
Correct.
Libby said that. Okay, so that's that.
All right.
Yes, it's true.
All right.
Bill said, was that Joe Donahue's guffaw during the last break, or was that Ray?
I don't know what the break was.
No, me neither. Tom says, I just lost respect
for
our beloved Libby today. You can't have it both ways. Rosemary's correct. I disagree with Stephen's comments. If you allow the gay community to pursue their lifestyle, you cannot then make a value judgment on someone else's. Okay.
This is not my lifestyle. This
Who's
is my
Stephen?
Life we're talking about.
This is Gottlieb who said I was wrong and thinking one is not connected to the other.
I think Libby
Post
is overreacting. The judge specifically said the bigamy law is illegal and appropriate. Anyone seeking a second marriage license who's already legally married may not do so. In effect, he upheld the definition of marriage as being two people. He ruled a Utah law prohibiting polygamy unconstitutional, citing the historic Lawrence versus Texas case, which struck down sodomy laws when applied to consenting couples, same or different sex, in the privacy of their own homes. Judge Whatup applied the same logic to two or more consenting adults cohabiting in the privacy of their own homes.
Okay. We're almost done.
Okay.
Could we be done? Or do you...
Well, there's more, but...
Well, why don't we read them tomorrow? Or,
okay.
You know,
all right,
Joe's show.
Thank you for your letters.
Yes.
We love hearing from you. Yeah.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Thanks to Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, Alan Shartok. I'm Ray Graffin. That's all the time we have for today. Feel free to email us and to try to get some in on the panel tomorrow. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.